This episode of The Boat Geeks is sponsored by The Boater's Guide, a free app for Pacific Northwest boaters. The Boater's Guide is adventure and information right at your fingertips, right when you need it. Find your happy place with The Boater's Guide, a free download on your phone or tablet in the App Store and Google Play.
On this episode of The Boat Geeks, we have Matt Steverson from the Duracell Project.
You know, I was going to say he's a jack of all trades.
Yes.
But that diminishes all the skills that this guy has.
Right. Because the saying is jack of all trades, master of none. But yeah. I wouldn't say that he's a master of none.
No. Yeah. I mean, he's completely rebuilding. He gutted and is rebuilding an open 60 sailboat that was raced around the world to be a beautiful, comfortable cruising boat for he and Yanni and...
And their child on the way. They just announced that they have a child on the way. Congratulations to you guys. It's going to be a wonderful home for their future child or for their child. And, it is an amazing project. You can follow along from the very beginning on their YouTube channel and see the entire process. And they've come so far and it is such a beautiful boat. I can't wait to see the finish. All right. Here it is. The next episode of The Boat Geeks with Matt Steverson and the Duracell Project.
From beautiful Port Townsend, Washington, a Victorian seaport on the Salish Sea, and recorded aboard the motor vessel Traveler, it's The Boat Geeks with Darren and Darren.
I'm daydreaming of a day.
All right, welcome to this next episode of The Boat Geeks. I am your host, Darren.
And I'm your other host, Darren.
And our guest today, you can find them on their YouTube channel at The Duracell Project. Our guest with his wife, Yannicka, are refitting and restoring a legendary race boat known as Duracell. And I say known as, we'll get to that later. They have over 2 years of weekly videos featuring specific boat projects, regular updates on how everything's going, what's coming up next. Over 120 videos, over 80,000 subscribers. Videos regularly get on the channel upwards of 100,000 plus views, with your top video receiving over 1.3 million views. And I think you just crossed a threshold of 10 million views on your channel.
Yeah.
In just two years. That's incredible.
And you've been featured in magazines such as 48 Degrees North, Cruising World, Professional Boat Builder, Sail, and more. Our guest today, Matt Steverson, shipwright by trade and one of 50% of the Duracell Project with Yannicka and the community that's helping you.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that. So Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
We're excited to be here.
We're very excited to have you here. I did do a crash course on your channel and what you've been up to, read a few of the articles and, what a project.
Yeah.
I mean, to say, a project right now, you're a shipwright by trade. Is that, are you doing Duracell Project full time now? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, we started it, we got the boat in June of 2021 and then started really working on it in earnest probably in September. And I worked for the next 6 months, on weekends on Duracell and then during the week on my own. I had a boat maintenance business. And I think by May or June the next year, I had stopped doing my maintenance business and was just working on Duracell full time.
Wow. So, yeah. Because you wanted to be able to finish it within 20 years.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. I mean, the whole goal, the whole thing was a big kind of risk to start the YouTube channel and just to be able to pay for the project. And that was the goal, is so that I could work on it full time. That was the whole goal. Because, you're right. Otherwise, it would be... nights and weekends and taking 20 years. And also, we wouldn't have the opportunity to use to, I feel like we're doing a real high end build now, whereas before I would have been scrounging in the dumpsters at the boat yard, begging for excess materials and everything to get the boat done. But
you know, when you say that, though, it makes me think of how many boat projects are there out around the country where people
just in Port Townsend.
Just in Port Townsend, right?
Because people can only work on the weekends or in the evenings, and boats languish. They just sit there for 25 years in some guy's yard in Seattle, right?
Burnout is real. It's a real thing.
It's funny, when we moved up here from down south in California, I always tell people, in California when I'd drive around, I'd see cars in everybody's yards, you know, up on blocks or whatever. Mm-hmm. Up here, it's boats in everybody's yard. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of projects, some unfortunately abandoned, but some thriving like yours and very lucky. Now, I want to get to the history of the boat, but first we like to ask our guests, because we're the boat geeks, we love everything about boats. What do you love about boats? What's your history with boats?
I didn't really start boating until I was in college. I took a sailing course called The Arts of the Sailor and just was immediately hooked by sailing, like being propelled by the wind and the intricacies. Like, it was immediately apparent to me that you could never stop learning how to do this. And it just seemed it was a very natural fit for me. And then I got into racing, and I was really, really into racing for about 10 years after college. And I was the reason I really liked racing was for the adventure more than anything else. Is I loved going and doing, like, I got to do the Pacific Cup, and I got to do race to Alaska, and I got to do the Van Isle, and I got to do all kinds of, you know, just local races around here, which the weather was any different way. And,
no the conditions two races are alike.
Yeah, exactly. And I loved that about it. It was so dynamic. And then, I got into cruising, living on a boat, and then I realized that I love working on boats too. And so, no two boats are the same. Mm-hmm. No two boat projects are the same. And everybody has a different idea about how they want their boat to work. And so,
what was that transition like from being into the racing element and then how did you discover the whole cruising element? Because they're so different.
I started living on a boat. I was working at a boatyard, and I got a hookup for a liveaboard slip, and I got a 36-foot rough water. Great boat, and lived on that for like
a woody or a
no, it's a fiberglass hull with a plywood deck and superstructure, and started living on it and started doing projects on it and loved it. And from there I got into cruising, you know, and that's how when I met Yanni, one of the first things we did was we went up and spent 6 weeks in the San Juans, and both of us were like, oh my god, this is like the coolest thing we've ever done.
That's cool.
Yep.
That's very cool. So now, obviously, the boat formerly known as Duracell, I don't know if you've chosen a name yet. I did see your video that was put out a few months ago regarding some potential names. We'll get to that. But this boat has you guys say storied past. I would agree with that. It has an extensive history, one of which crosses over with our previous guest, Bruce Schwab, and he had mentioned the original designer and builder, right, was Mike.
Mike didn't design it. He built it, though.
Okay.
It was designed by Roger Martin. Roger Martin designed all three of Mike's boats, Airco, Duracell, and then Coyote. Okay. And Roger Martin's an incredible designer. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen other boats of his, like the Aerodynes, and there's a boat around here called Grey Wolf. That's his design. But he's got many, many designs that are very popular. Mike Plant built the boat with other folks as well. But he was, you know, there for the whole project. And there's a great book that his sister wrote. She talks about how much he hated boat building. But Roger Martin, like being around the whole project, said he was really good at it. And so that was when we first learned about the boat. I was working with a guy who knew Roger Martin, and so he put me in touch with him, and I actually got to go out. I was doing deliveries out on the East Coast, and I got to go to Newport, and he pulled out all the files, and we went through all the drawings and everything together, and he let me make copies. And
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was really, really fun, but it gave me a lot of confidence in the boat itself, because Roger talked about how good of a job Mike did in putting the boat together. So,
which he needed to, because he put that boat through its paces, or all the owners did over the years. So Mike's he was the first American to participate in the first, how do you pronounce it?
Vendée Globe.
Yeah.
Vendée Globe. Thank you. I wasn't going to say it wrong. And so, I mean, that's pretty significant as far as that boat's history. That's a huge deal. Then under the a new owner and renamed Northwest Spirit, she sailed in and won the Pan Pacific West race, and then had some troubles at sea and was basically on the hard for 25 years before you purchased her.
Yeah, totally. He had done a ton of sailing with the boat. Mm-hmm. He brought it from the East Coast, went across the Pacific a couple times, and then was always planning. His dream was always to do a circumnavigation, nonstop solo circumnavigation. And unfortunately got cut short. And he lost the rig and put the boat in his backyard, and, you know, things get in the way.
Life intentions. Gets,
like, he had a very successful business and started a family, and you know, these things happen. So
common story.
Yeah, exactly.
And how was it you found out? You read something that he posted?
Yeah, he put a post on Sailing Anarchy just saying that he had put the boat on the for sale ads on Sailing Anarchy, but then wrote a post saying, I have this boat, it's awesome. And I don't think I can take the project on anymore. I've gotten too old, and we're open to any ideas that anybody has. Mm-hmm. And so I saw it and I immediately emailed him, and it took us a couple years. You know, we learned about the boat in September 2019, and then it wasn't put in our yard until June 21, 2021. So COVID got in the way, a few other things, and so
putting that boat into your yard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness! Mm-hmm. First of all, what was the name of that trucking company?
Associated.
Yeah. They are so good.
Yeah,
I think
they're really, really good. Yeah,
the driver was impressive.
I think I've seen them moving somebody else's boat locally in videos as well. You had, like, at one point the clearance on the side of your house.
Yeah, yeah. I worked that company. They're like kind of the only gig in town.
Yeah,
but they're extremely professional.
Sure.
And Val, the guy that drove the truck, he actually lives in Port Hadlock.
Oh yeah.
Oh, cool.
He works some other jobs in town, and I see him every once in a while, and he's always really excited to get to move the boat out of the yard when it's done. But they're really, really good. I used to work with them I used to set up the boat show in Seattle with CSR, and they get hired to drive the travel lifts and bring the trucks in stuff, and like park those boats an inch from each other in there. It was really fun.
Highly professional. If you do check out the channel, which I recommend you do, go back to first, second video, and you can see this insane job that these guys do. Highly skilled. One of my thoughts when I started watching your channel, as I mentioned before we started recording, I was looking at you back at the beginning and wondering how things have changed in the 2+ years. Like, obviously you had a mindset two plus years ago, what you thought was going to happen, how you thought it was going to happen, what speed it was going to happen. What have you learned over this time that kind of has changed your perspective, or, you know, what has the last 2+ years been like in terms of your motivations, your drive, your understanding how the project is moving forward?
Well, when we got into it, I would say that we had no idea if the whole YouTube thing was going to work. And that would be a big factor in how the project went, is how well the YouTube channel did. And so at the beginning, like I said, I was just kind of, I had all my drawings and everything together, and I had an idea of how I was going to put the boat together. And so we just started, and I guess at the, like, how do I didn't know how much, like, it was going to cost.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how long it would take or anything like that. And
it's just a big leap of faith, right?
I mean, it was a big leap of faith. It's a hard question to answer. But
sure.
Once the YouTube thing started, that becomes like such a great motivator.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have to get content done every week. We have to show that we've got something done, make the video interesting. And so we've learned how to, you know, make good progress every week, which I think is extremely important. And then, you know, doing our best to leverage the audience that we have as far as like, because there's a lot of people out there watching that know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that don't know what they're talking about when it comes to like comments and stuff, but there's lots of people that have really good contributions, which we try to leverage. There's, you know,
your bowsprit.
Yeah, exactly. Though we have this engineer, naval architect, who reached out to us really early, and he's done so much for our channel. Like, and that not only makes the boat better, but it makes the channel much more interesting to people, and like gives us like legitimacy and credibility. And so, yeah, people like him make the project more interesting and better, like the boat better. And so, and there's tons of those people from Total Boat to my mom, who comes on all the time and is a huge help, and people love to see her on the channel. And so
that's awesome.
It's, you know,
shout out to your mom.
Yeah. Shout out to mom.
But you didn't know you didn't know you would have so many people actually helping you.
Yeah. That's, I think
that's wonderful.
That was I think the biggest thing that we learned was that we were not expecting all the help and all the encouragement that we get. That's like, it was, the internet is such a scary place, and
you never know how you're going to be received.
Exactly. And we still like get plenty of hate, but that's only less than a percent of all the encouragement that we get.
They're the loudest ones usually. I love the community aspect of it. And, you know, I live vicariously through many YouTube channels and creators, doing things that I may never get the opportunity to do myself. Do you feel like with this, because now you have Patreon, which you can find all this information at their YouTube channel, at the Duracell Project, all the ways to support and get involved. But do you feel like these Patreons are like a board of directors that are keeping you in line and moving? Or do you feel it's much more of a just a supportive community? That, like, what is it? I'm sure that added a little bit of pressure in terms of, you know, now you have to deliver.
Sure.
Which not that your intention was to not deliver.
Right.
But what is it like having that group of supporters behind you?
I would say our relationship with each of them is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them are much more vocal, and whether it's just like commenting or like emailing us and asking questions, and we love all of it. Like it's really... It would feel strange to us to not have any kind of relationship with these people that are encouraging us so much and giving us money.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, every relationship is different. At the beginning, I think we felt like there was extra pressure to deliver for them, but now we're just in the groove and we understand what we can get out every week. And I think people, you know, the expectations are set. And so, and, you know, we try to make that happen. We try to get a little bit better every week with our editing and content creation and stuff like that. And so it's, they've never given us any kind of extra, they've never asked for anything, which is just, that's the craziest part to us, is that we're not giving them anything other than these videos. And they don't need to pay for them. They just decide to do it. And it's like the most heartwarming thing ever. So
it's interesting, the people being involved like that. Do you feel like they're involved because of the history of the boat? Or do you feel like they're involved because they want to see you and Yannicka succeed? Do you think they're involved because of both? Like, you know, I get involved with stuff like that. I obviously the historic aspect is important, and nobody likes to see boats get broken up or whatever, you know, and history is super important and interesting and vital to, you know, to us as humans, is just knowing our history and the history of the stuff around us. But I also love to see people succeed. I loved, you know, the idea that you and Janneke just stepped off this cliff and said, we're going to try and make this happen. And it's happening is astonishing. And, you know, like,
I think it has a lot to do with personality as well.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have great personality for sure.
Don't take this wrong, but you're not a professional on camera actor. Yeah. You're a real guy, but you have passion and you're helping people learn what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So that element is, I think, what makes you so successful. The boat, the history is great. The projects are great, but you and Yanni, you guys have, you have that it thing, I think.
Thank you.
He's like, I know.
I think you both answered the question that there's lots of reasons why people decide to support the channel and watch. And we get tons of comments from people saying that they're learning a lot, which is another thing that I did not expect in going into this, was that, you know,
be educational.
It would be educational.
Totally is, though.
Yeah, we get lots of those comments. Yeah. And plenty of people sign up because they were like, oh, yeah, I remember watching Mike Plant when I was growing up. Or I grew up in Minnesota at the same yacht club that he was in or whatever. Plenty of people that are into, like, hot cruising boats. And they just want to see a cool cruising boat out there. And and I like to think that plenty of people just because they like us.
Yeah. So. A spectrum. So we like to ask and answer our own questions.
Yeah, Well, and another element is just the progression element. I mean, you stripped this boat. Mm-hmm. It was just the hull, as it was referred to way back, right?
Yeah.
And so you have talk about, you know, before and afters are pretty popular, and you have got this incredible before and after project.
Yeah.
And I think people really like just following the progress.
Yeah. Yeah. And right now we're feeling like, you know, the boat is the project is still in the construction phase. I'm still doing tons of fiberglass work. And, I think there is a bit of fatigue when it comes to those kinds of things. But we are, it is nice because the view changes a lot, you know, from week to week. But people, I think, do get bored with the fiberglass stuff too. So, but I think as we get deeper into the project, as we get done with the fiberglass work and start doing, you know, systems installations and working on the keel and working on the rig and
welding aluminum fuel tanks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was a great video.
It's just going to get more and more interesting, I think. So,
but the fact that you have this many viewers, this many videos, this many viewers, this much support, and it's pretty much been almost all fiberglass work.
Yeah.
Is a lot. That's saying a lot.
I know.
And I think what it means is that you have a great future ahead. Do you guys plan to continue creating content when you're out there cruising?
We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do feel like we'll owe it to those who've watched and supported us that we will definitely spend lots of time once the boat's in the water, just going out, like, seeing how it works. Mm-hmm. And there'll be plenty of content of me breaking stuff on the boat, and so and putting it through its paces and
shakedown cruise.
We don't feel like we have the personalities for, like, a lifestyle channel, and we're not really interested in doing that kind of thing.
Well, anyway. And you don't have to do weekly videos once you finish the project.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, every month or two you can upload something.
Yeah, exactly. And we definitely want to continue something. We just haven't decided what that's going to be yet. So
I have a feeling there'll be quite a lot of people that, you know, would like some kind of update of what you've been up to out there.
Yeah. We're not going to go cold turkey and just shut it off, but, there'll be something.
How has this affected, I'm sure you get
recognized in various places you go now? It's like, hey, you're the Project Duracell guy, right?
It does happen sometimes for sure. So, yeah, it's the weirdest thing ever. I'll get recognized for this thing, the internet.
So we mentioned community involvement. I brought up the bowsprit. You've had the community involved somewhat since the beginning. In I'm sure there's comments in your videos and so forth that you've, like you said, there's some people that really know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that don't. How else besides the bowsprit and even with the bowsprit, how did the community get involved and how did you decide, hey, this is a great idea, I'm going to implement that in the boat? Did you intentionally seek out community involvement, or was it something, an idea that somebody put forward and you thought, hey, we'll do this, and then that seemed to work and you've done it a couple times at least?
No, before we ever started the YouTube channel, we always knew that was a good way to progress the project and get the algorithm working. Mm-hmm. Just make for a better boat. I knew, like, from watching Tally Ho and stuff like that, that there are tons of sailors that love to watch this kind of stuff, people mm-hmm. that know what they're talking about. And so, no, that was always an idea we had, like, from the beginning, to involve the community however we could. And we didn't know what that was going to look like.
Yeah.
If it was just going to be comments coming in under the videos, or if people were, we didn't know that people were going to be emailing us. And, like, you would get pages and pages of emails about, you know, for that one person will write about all their ideas and stuff like that. I mean, it's really nice of them to spend all that time thinking about our project and stuff. But to answer your question, yes, from the very beginning, we wanted to involve the community. We just didn't know what that was going to look like.
Didn't know how it was going to exist. Yep. Yeah. What is the name of the naval, did you say architect or engineer?
Yeah, his name is Evan.
Evan.
Yep. And what he does now is he's a naval architect for a tugboat company. Mm. But in the past, he's worked for Far Yacht Design, doing America's Cup boat stuff. So, wow. And he is a circumnavigator himself. He fixed up a catamaran and took his family cruising.
Nice.
For like 7-8 years, something like that.
So some real world experience.
Yeah.
And obviously knows the software.
Right.
It seemed like a big step forward when he came aboard.
It was a huge step forward. And something I've also learned is that, you know, I think like we talked about earlier, everybody has a different idea of how they want their boat to work, mm-hmm. different philosophy for how, you know, they envision their, how they, different philosophy for how their boat should work.
Right.
And his philosophies and mine are very similar to each nice. Other. That's and good. So that was really apparent immediately that he knew how to construct things simply, you know, not too many bells and whistles, but make it work really well, very functional. And so, yeah, I really appreciate his mindset when it comes to like putting projects together. So, and we have a lot of projects in the works right now between the mast and the keel and stuff like that. So there's plenty more coming from Evan. Yeah.
So you mentioned all the fiberglass work. Is there anything specific that's coming up or not? Not doesn't have to be necessarily in the very near future, but something, is there a project that you are super looking forward to yourself? Something you're like, I'm done doing all this fiberglass, although you probably won't ever be done, but you know, I really want to do this and I'm looking forward to it.
I'm very excited about most of the projects coming up. Immediately coming up, we're building the salon and the galley, mm-hmm. which that will really, really change the interior of the boat. Yeah. And you know, like from the beginning, when Yanni agreed to do this project, she was like, we can do this, but it's got to have a sweet galley in it. And so I was like, so it's kind of the focal point of the boat. And so once that comes together, it's going to be really fun. And I had a guy out who designs galley or kitchens the other day. And we have some really good ideas about how that's going to come together. So that project is going to be really cool just to see the end product. Mm-hmm. And then in the future, like in the near future, we're going to be doing a lot of deck stuff. which will be interesting because then we're kind of finishing the exterior of the boat and getting ready to paint. Mm-hmm. I'm not excited about prepping for paint, but I am excited about seeing the boat painted.
Of course. Yes. The finished.
Yeah, exactly. And then next winter will be, I think, a big shift in the project where we start doing systems mm-hmm. and finish work and stuff like that. And so we're going to be installing propulsion, which and batteries, and that's going to be a really, really fun project. We plan on doing a hybrid electric propulsion yeah. system, and so it's really, really interesting stuff. I enjoy that stuff way more than fiberglass work.
I bet.
And I really enjoy fiberglass work. And so that's going to be super fun.
Nice.
And, you know, installing stuff like steering. Mm-hmm. And that we're, you know, doing keel design now. And so once that project gets going too, that'll be
You're
way outside my wheelhouse too. I don't do welding. I don't do lead, but got to learn.
And I'm assuming you're going to work with somebody local to recast that bottom section of the, is that you still the plan? You're moving it from like 12 feet to 8 feet or something like mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, that is the plan.
You're going to have a bulb?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. We would like to do a bulb. There's a lot riding on what condition the current keel is in, because mm-hmm. like that top third of it is steel.
Yeah.
And so it might be fine. It probably isn't. And right. so we might need to build a new stub. So there's a lot to figure out there still.
Yeah, but, that's a heck of a project.
Yeah, for now, we're just trying to figure out, we're just doing the math to see how much weight and how much riding moment we need to install.
You mentioned the decks.
Yeah.
What are you doing for your exterior?
Like the paint?
Well, the surface. How are you? What's your non-skid? And
oh, yeah. Well, All Grip is on board, and so we're going to do paint the whole boat with All Grip. Yeah. And so they'll be just All Grip painted on the foredeck and side decks. We'll probably do like a Flexi-Teak style cockpit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And, it'll be all painted, linear polyurethane paint. So get it all sprayed.
She's mm-hmm. going to be beautiful someday.
Yeah, exactly. We have to extend the shed. Like, so we have to cover mm-hmm. the entire boat. So that's going to be a project for the spring.
Yeah.
Yep.
Getting ready for the painting and keeping all the dust off and
yep.
the debris. You live out in the woods.
Yeah.
And I could right away, I'm like, oh, just you're going to have like
pollen.
Things falling off yeah. the trees.
Yeah, exactly. No, there's already the boat is a constant mess on deck because I don't have it covered. And so, yeah, we're going to be covering the whole thing to keep dust from getting out mm-hmm. or getting mm-hmm. in.
Right.
So.
The going back to the galley, you mentioned the galley being a focal point. I thought it was really cool how you decided to, and it makes sense, to raise that up. Obviously, you need to run some stuff underneath, but also that fit right under the doghouse, you're calling
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, because I'm, you know, I'm tall, I'm 6'2", and so just the idea of that space, sometimes sailboats can feel a little claustrophobic to me. I loved how that just opened up. That whole yeah. design mm-hmm. is just super cool. I think that's going to be a really neat galley and a neat area
yeah.
to kind of be up above and kind of see everything.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's all derived from our old sailboat, Louise, which we're just stretching it. It's yeah. pretty much exactly the same layout, just stretched out a bit. And, I think it's working out really well. There's a few little changes, like raising up the sole in there, but you know, the ceilings will still be almost 8 feet high when you're in the galley.
60 really, feet is a big boat.
It is, yeah. But it's a race boat.
Yeah.
And so a 60-foot race boat is a lot different than like an Oyster oh, sure. 60.
Yeah.
You know, they have so much more volume sure. inside of four bedrooms and yes. three bathrooms yeah. and everything. And so that was the appeal of the whole thing to me, was that we can have the length of a 60-foot boat, but have the interior of more like a 40-foot boat. With extra width. And so you have tons of space width-wise to make a nice, comfortable interior, but not so big that you're cramming it with tons and tons sure. of systems. And
yeah.
There's lots of room, both forward for storage, like sail lockers and stuff like that, and then aft for systems, keeping the engine outside of the living space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, it's going to be a fast, but hopefully still kind of simple. We're yeah. trying to keep it simple as best we can.
Well, it's a beautiful design, and you will be, like with all your cruising friends out there, you will always be the first to arrive. Yeah. I think for sure.
Yeah.
What do you anticipate the cruising speed to be, you know, on a boat like that? What kind of speeds can it reach? Or what kind of speeds did it reach back in its heyday?
I think it would, you know, it depends on how hard you're sailing it, yeah. You know, and we're not going to push nearly as hard as what John and especially Mike, I think Mike Plant was like, he
pushed that to the limits.
Exactly. He pushed it hard.
Oh, that's racing.
Yeah. And so, you know, if we're consistently getting 200 knot days over and over and over again, that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
Which, you know, 8 knots that's all day long.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. And so I have a good friend, Graham, who you should consider having on your podcast, Graham Essery. Him and his family own Dog Bark. I did the race to Alaska with him, did tons of racing with him. But he's a extremely good sailor. They attempted the Northwest Passage on their Open 60.
Oh, wow.
Probably this was in 2019, I think they tried to do it. And I think they're planning on doing it again this summer or next summer, something like that.
So you said they attempted.
They made it up to the North Slope, and the ice never cleared, so they couldn't go through.
Okay.
So they turned around and went to Hawaii.
What a terrible second choice.
I know.
Yeah. But they kept a really cool blog, and so they had an Open 60 from the same generation as our boat,
nice.
And they converted it to a cruising boat, and... it's really, really cool. And they never take the first reef out because they've got plenty of power already.
Right.
And nice. they're making 10 knots.
How
no
many
problem.
Open so, 60 conversions are there? I mean,
it's a good question.
Seems unusual.
I know it is unusual. It's pretty funny that there are two in this area.
Yeah.
Even that there's two Open 60s in this area,
right.
Let alone converting them to cruising boats. And so, the Dog Bark was also raced in the not the first Vendée Globe, but the BOC in like 1991. So they raced in the same race together.
Wow.
Yeah, very, very similar boats.
You know, there was a point when I had sailboats and I was thinking long term cruising and wanting speed. I thought, you know, a MacGregor 65 would be a nice cruising boat. And it's kind of that, you know, the balance between performance and cruising.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you guys are doing is going to blow the socks off of a MacGregor 65.
Well, that boat is like kind of in the same philosophy, I guess, in that it's really long.
Simple.
And super narrow.
Yep. Yep.
And so very easy to push through the water. And it's interesting whole design for sure.
Yeah.
So.
I sailed on one in... out of Tampa Bay once, and it was eye-opening.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what got me thinking about it.
Yeah, totally.
So we had Jesse Weigel, race boss for Race to Alaska, on previously.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with the Race to Alaska?
Sure.
I mean, there's got to be some kind of good story there. How could you do the Race to Alaska without... What was your boat? What was your crew? What was your experience?
It was so we sailed on a Farrier-designed... F-25C. So they're not built by Corsair. They're not home built, but kind of home built.
Like
it's a trimaran.
Kit boat type. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a different company that built them that were new to boat building.
Right.
But the designs are really, really cool. Super, super fast boat. They're all carbon and very Spartan. And we borrowed the boat from a friend. He originally wanted to do the boat, but didn't have time. And so a guy I sailed with a lot, Al Hughes, who built Louise, which was the boat that we cruised on.
Yeah.
And he also owned Dog Bark,
the
Open 60. He borrowed the boat from Alan and decided to do the Race to Alaska. And this is the first race to Alaska, 2015. And I had no idea what I was getting into.
Nobody did, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And so my job was to do the provisioning for the race and to do all the carbon parts manufacturing. So we had to do a new rudder cassette, and we had to do some kind of oarlock thing to figure out how to row the boat, and a few other projects. And so that was my contribution. And there were three of us on board. It was Al and Graham and I. And none of us had ever sailed a trimaran before. But it was like the perfect boat for the race is what Al figured, because it was great in light air. Mm-hmm. It would be easy-ish to row. We weren't going into the race to row. We were going to
you wanted the
sail
wind.
And we had a crazy crossing to Victoria. We were there by 9 o'clock in the morning. I think we were sitting down for breakfast at like 9:30 in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah. It was windy, and we were realizing what we had gotten ourselves into with this boat, how fast it was. And we immediately went to Goodwill and bought ourselves ski goggles and like waterproof everything. We had full dry suits because it was so wet on board. And so we started at, you know, noon or whatever on Sunday. And that first afternoon was really gorgeous sailing up through the Gulf Islands. It was like a light downwind right sail through the Gulf Islands. We were kind of in spitting distance of first place, as well as, like, you know, there were some really fast boats right behind us. And we figured it was going to be a really close, like, fun race against these, you know, there were the Bird Brothers on their Beach Cat. And there was that new Farrier, I think it was a 28R. I can't remember the name of it, but Canadian guys that were really good sailors. Some other really cool boats. Mm-hmm. Oh, there was the Paul Beaker's design, the Proa, was designed for the race. And Brandon's Turnpoint Designs catamaran Felix, that was also a really, really cool boat. So there was all these crazy boats in the race. Sure. And we went out through one of the passes out of the Gulf Islands. Saw some orcas right there.
Nice.
It went dark. It got really, really windy. And we sailed hard through the night. And the next morning we woke up and we were like 50 miles ahead.
Wow.
Yeah. And like sailed hard up until like made it through Seymour Narrows, like right at slack.
Good timing.
Yeah. Jeez. And we knew like that was the goal. It's like if we could make slack, we were goners. And so... And it was a hard sail getting up there because it was really getting windy out of the north. And so it was upwind all the way through Seymour Narrows. And so at that point, we were like 12 hours ahead. And this was, you know, noon the next day after starting, I think.
Is that right? Two? Yeah, that would make sense.
It was the evening of the second day of the race, and that we had made it through Seymour Narrows. And I think it's just like 10, 15 miles up Johnstone, it makes a hard left turn to the kind of the northwest. And there's a anchorage there called Chatham, or I can't remember the name of the anchorage, but we stopped there for the night. We're there for like 6 hours just to get something to eat and sleep. Because the next day it was forecast to be like gust, like blowing 40 down Johnstone.
Mm. Yeah.
And so we got up really early to go out with the tide and hit it really hard the next day. And from there on, it was a lot easier after that. But that was the really, really hard day, was going up Johnstone Strait that third day of the race. And by that time, we knew that as long as we didn't break the boat, we were going to win. Mm-hmm. And so we sailed hard, but not too hard. And at one point we were going up, it was before Cape Caution. Mm-hmm. There's a whole bunch of crazy underwater pillars that you kind of weave through. Mm. And I was navigating, Al was at the helm. It was the middle of the night, and we were kind of weaving through these things, and all of a sudden we hit something hard.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh shit, it just killed us.
Mm-hmm.
And we had hit a log, and luckily it just put a big dent. We couldn't pull our daggerboard up anymore. But that was the worst thing that happened, pretty much. And we lost our GoPro. That was the other big bummer, that we lost our GoPro during the race. And so
you're just talking about debris is what you hit.
We just hit a floating log. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. So, but no, it was a really, crazy experience.
I bet.
All the people coming out to us while we were racing.
Yeah.
You know, people would come deliver food to us, just like that we didn't know who they were. They were just like, we've been following along, like in
so
planes
cool.
buzzing by and helicopters.
Yeah.
Like, it was really, really, really
that
cool.
It's been wild.
It was wild. Yeah. And we did it in like almost exactly 5 days. So, yeah.
Wow. What place?
First.
You won.
We were the
first.
We were the first to ever win the race in Alaska.
Oh, I
had no idea.
You're yeah. more celebrity than I thought.
I was waiting to hear who overtook you.
Yeah.
No.
Well, yeah, congratulations.
I've never met a winner of the R2AK.
I know. That's pretty awesome.
This is awesome, man.
Yeah.
Just elevated this podcast.
Yeah.
yeah.
Winner,
yeah.
winner, chicken dinner.
So, yeah. What was the name of that boat?
Elsie Puduk.
Okay.
Yep. Right yeah. On. The daughter of the guy who we borrowed the boat from. Her name is Katie, and she was really into. There's a series of books called Elsie Puduk Who Skips, and so the boat, the boat skipped across the water. So that's we won. Cool. I think the next boat came in. It was like 60 hours later.
Man,
yeah,
you guys really won.
Yeah. And have you done any other races since?
No, that was really the last big race I did.
Once you do that, that's a good way to go out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now it's the cruising life.
Yeah.
Well, and before you put in your hybrid electric propulsion system, I mean, mm-hmm. you could.
I know. Yeah.
Have you even
I've thought about figuring out some way to do like a cool pedal drive system from in the quarter berths or something. I need like 8 people to drive that.
But hamsters.
Yeah.
Just
exactly.
get a bunch of hamsters.
Yeah, going. Totally. I think it'd be really cool to have the boat be the Grim Sweeper.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of names, are you guys any closer? I saw the pulling out of the hat. You had some ideas.
No.
Dugnar.
Dugnar. Yeah, it's Dugnar.
Yeah.
And that's.
I like that name.
I do
cool.
too. I like it a
is
lot.
That
it
Norse?
Would be. It is. Yeah. It's kind of. I think it's kind of a. Well, I don't know if it's an Old Norse word, but it's. It means. When a community gets together for like a newlywed couple, they help raise their barn or their house or something.
So or their boat.
Or their boat. Yeah, yeah exactly. Cool. And so that's a name we've thought about. Spirit of the Woods.
Yeah, I like that one too.
Yeah, just because it's getting reborn in the woods. And another one is Leaving at Duracell.
Which it's never, I said, known as Duracell. It was never formally named Duracell. It was Spirit of...
I think it was the Spirit of Minnesota when Mike sailed it. And then, John renamed it the Northwest Spirit.
But it's been known as Duracell because of the sponsor. And it looked like a giant battery on the...
The copper top.
Oh, that was what I was thinking. Oh, you could name it copper top.
Yeah.
But then that's associated with copper.
Yeah.
So there's a crazy story that Roger told me that when they first launched the boat, have you guys watched the movie about, it's called Coyote?
No,
it's about
Mike Plant. No, but I know I want to see it.
You should really watch it. It's really
sure.
good.
Yeah.
But there's a scene of them launching the boat for the first time, and it has this copper deck, copper-colored deck. And Roger told this story about they took it out sailing for the first time, and it was like really sunny, and it just melted the deck. They had to replace like half the deck because it got so hot.
Now, that was done just for Duracell, the sponsor? Like they?
Yes.
And what did they, what's a copper deck? I mean, like literally?
It was just copper colored, and I can still pick paint through some of the paint and find there's like this copper.
And so nobody had ever done that in there. And had and no idea what would happen in the sun, I guess.
I didn't know if they just didn't.
Crazy story.
Yeah, it is.
Still finding
the copper. I had one more potential name just to throw at you.
All right.
Durable.
Durable.
Hopefully, right?
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
I am building the whole thing out of plastic, and so that's kind of one of the...
Yeah.
No rotting.
Yeah, for sure. Boy.
Yep.
Tell me about it.
the owner of a 1946 Matthews. Yeah, tell me about it. Wood.
Wood is beautiful, but a lot of work.
Yeah.
So now you mentioned that obviously... I feel like you can't strictly schedule the building of a boat, a project of this size, like you can't strictly schedule sailing. You know, it's obviously conditions matter. Is it still your goal to launch this boat while you're 40?
No.
Yeah.
You've let go. Yeah, no. It I mean 2 or 3 years is what we're hoping.
Yeah.
I've been saying that for 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah. So well, I mean that's boat building, right?
Yeah,
that's working on a boat.
Yep. And the whole yeah, and YouTube has really changed that. A couple other things have changed that too, but and depending on how well the channel does, if it does better, mm-hmm. you know, we've all seen Tally Ho and how he's able to hire people.
Sure.
And that expedites the project. Oh, and yeah, so yeah. If we can get to that point where I can hire somebody, that's another, the next goal for us. But it all depends on how well the YouTube channel does.
I would assume that because you've had the level of success that you've had so far with your YouTube channel, and it's been primarily doing all the plastic work, that you have a lot of potential for growth once you start getting into other projects. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my feeling in just being around YouTube for, you know, 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I hope to see that.
Yeah.
I hope you explode in growth.
Thank you.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, I feel like when I, you know, I follow a couple other channels, Tally Ho included, of projects, boats being built that have incredible history, or I'm really, you know, I connect with the person or the people that are doing the project. And I'm very thankful that I found your guys' channel.
No, thank you.
Since we've started the podcast, Darren kept bringing up your boat and your project. And so it was always kind of on my periphery of kind of understanding what it was, but really taking the deep dive into everything you're doing. You guys are awesome. Totally great couple to support. The content that you're creating is very engaging, and what I do like about it is it's fun to watch. Your editing has definitely gotten better over 2 years, and you're making a lot of great videos. It's engaging and it's educational, and you guys do have really good personality. So I do recommend everybody check out the Duracell Project on YouTube.
And that, I gotta say, that's all Yannicka. Like, she does all the editing and filming and everything, and she's like, you know, this is as much a project of hers as it is for mine. She,
yeah.
We could not do this without each other
yeah.
putting in as much effort as
she's
she
doing
does.
A great job.
I know.
You guys make a great team.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And there's there's a whole slew of YouTube channels in regards to boats and boating and boat building and so forth. And they range from, I don't want to insult anybody, but from kind of poorly done videos, but mm-hmm. you know, the subject matter is still interesting, mm-hmm. to really, really slick
yeah.
productions. And what I like that Yanni's done is she's kept it, it's really well done, but it's still real. There's yeah. still,
it's personal,
it's a very mm-hmm. organic yeah. element mm-hmm. to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably partly, you know, you, how you come across on screen, but the project and her editing.
Yeah,
is really good.
It's really important to us that we are ourselves, mm-hmm. We're not trying to manufacture anything in our videos, and so, but yeah, she does a really beautiful job like putting it together, and she's a great writer, and so I think that translates really well to, you know, telling a story,
yeah.
and so, and she really enjoys it too. So, yeah, it's just, we just feel really lucky that it's all kind of aligns that way, that she enjoys it as much as she does, and she's as good at it as she is. And so
she's also a good speaker.
Yeah.
She's, you know, I do a lot of voice acting and voice over work in my field. I noticed every time she would like narrate a video, she's really good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She nails it. And, but yeah, you guys make a great team.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to now having another channel that I'm addicted to and, living vicariously
yeah,
through.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys do a great job, make a great team. And you have, like Darren said earlier, I think whatever that it thing is that, makes somebody watchable as compared to not as watchable. So thank congratulations
you. Thank
on,
you.
I mean, you've achieved a lot in just a little over 2 years. Your numbers are, amazing. So again, and based on that, if nothing else, based on his numbers, again, I'm encouraging you all to go check it out. It's very entertaining, and you can get in there while it's still growing. And
oh yeah, there's so much left.
There's
yeah.
so much left, yeah. and you can become a part of the support network. Again, you know, Darren and I very much believe in the boating community. That's a big aspect of the reason why we do the podcast and why we love everything about boats. And being able to support fellow boaters, is, I think, a very worthwhile cause. And hopefully you'll find that out as well when you check out their YouTube channel. So again, you can find them on YouTube at the Duracell Project, but also Facebook and Patreon at the Duracell Project, and Instagram at the _Duracell_project. Is there anything else that you'd like to direct people to? There's a lot of articles out there on what you guys are doing, all the magazines that I mentioned, I'm sure more. But is there anything that you would like to point out specifically?
I don't think so. Yeah, I think you covered it all. We kind of stick strictly to YouTube. We're not very good at Instagram and Facebook and stuff like that.
Well, you're great at YouTube, so thank you. You have those skills.
I think it's stay tuned.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
That's the key.
There's lots tuned to come. Yeah.
Do you have a preference when people are wanting to support your project? I noticed you had like PayPal and Venmo and then Patreon. Where, if somebody wants to support what you guys are doing, which I know some of you are going to want to do,
yeah,
should they go to Patreon? Is that the best way to support you? Or
they can do it however they want to. You know, mm-hmm. Beggars can't be choosers.
Sure.
But I would say that if you become a Patreon member, then you don't have to watch ads.
Yeah.
On our Patreon page. Yeah. And so that's the only thing. But yeah, we encourage, or we, however you want to support us, we're open to it. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Well, it is a good cause, and can't wait to see more steps of the project. I love seeing you build the rooms. I love the staterooms and the way you designed it. And yeah, I know that there's definitely various stages in the upcoming sections of the build that I'm going to be very excited about.
Yeah.
So I'll be staying tuned for sure.
Yeah.
So, Matt, thank you for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank
really
you.
Appreciate it.
It was nice to meet you guys.
Likewise, and we hope we can have you back. Maybe
there you go.
The next big stage or something like that.
Yeah. I'm around.
Good. Yeah. We're kind of neighbors.
Yeah, totally.
All right.
Excellent. Absolutely. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm daydreaming of a day. I'm not wasting my time. Don't wait till I come alive. Sail away. I'm gonna sail away. Like being in the sunshine. Waking me up on the bright side. Living for a better day. I'm gonna sail away. Yeah, I try to live every day to the fullest. There's beauty in everything. I try to notice holograms.
I'm not in this too deep. Sing hallelujah on the basement floor. Yeah, I'm still holding out for so much more.